Now, on a day like today, it's not so bad. But this is the season that we're coming into when the days are shorter, it's darker, it gets cold, the snow comes, where we often start thinking about, you know, traveling, going perhaps someplace warmer, or maybe just someplace different. And when we think about traveling, there are a few ways that we can look at this whole nature of traveling. Now, I'm not talking about mode of transportation, right? I'm not talking about whether you drive somewhere, whether you fly somewhere, whether you ride your bike somewhere, or dog sled there, whatever the case may be. But I'm talking about how we approach the traveling itself. Usually, we approach traveling in a touristy way. And what I mean by that is, let's say, for example, we decided we wanted to go to London, England, that we had never been to Westminster Abbey before, and we thought it would be neat to see Westminster Abbey. And so with a touristy mentality, because that's what we're thinking of doing, we, of course, have to get there, which means getting up at whatever time we have to get up for the flight to leave. We get to CYYC, the airport. We take our shoes off and go through security after having checked our bags, and we cram ourselves into a hollow metal tube with wings, with chairs that are far too close together, and we endure the 8-hour flight until we finally arrive in London. And of course, because now we're jet lagged, that first day is not worth anything, so you go to sleep. And the next morning, you finally find yourself at Westminster Abbey. And then you see this big building, and you come in, and you marvel at how amazing it is, and it's wonderful, and you get to see it and enjoy the architecture, and then far too quickly, the trip is over, and it's time to come home. So now you go to Heathrow, and once again, you take your shoes off to go through security after having checked your bags, and you cram yourself into a hollow metal tube with wings, and you sit in chairs that are far too close together, and enjoy the 8-hour flight, enjoy, all the way back home, and then you get home, and now you're really jet-lagged because you're going the other direction, but it doesn't matter because if you're a working stiff, you still got to show up for work the next day, and your memory of your trip becomes simply that, a memory. You got to do the thing, you did it, and now you're back, and life carries on as normal, and that's about as far as it goes. Now, nothing wrong with that. That's how it works when you're traveling as a tourist to go to someplace new. But there's another way to look at traveling that could totally transform a trip like that. And that would be to look at the trip rather than as a tourist, but as one who is on a pilgrimage. Because you see, when you're traveling as a pilgrim, what's happening there is the journey from point A to point B is an integral part of the experience. It's not just about how to get to point B, but it becomes part of the package. And indeed, going from point B back to point A is also a significant part of the journey. And it is an intentional way of traveling. The idea being that when you do come back to point A, you end up having something altered within you. So if, for example, we were going to treat this trip to London and to Westminster Abbey as a pilgrimage, well, you'd still have to go to YYC first thing in the morning and do all the stuff we talked about, but while you're sitting there in that hollow metal tube with wings, you might be considering things you had already started to look into about Westminster Abbey. And while you are taking those 8 hours in the air, you might be thinking over the fact that, you know, Westminster Abbey was built in 960 CE, which means for over 1,000 years, Christians have come there every Sunday and other days of the week too, to worship the Lord. That there have been millions of people that have worshiped the Lord in that spot. And now you are going to be one to join in that long parade of penitent and pious people who are giving their praises to God. So when you now arrive in London, yes, you're tired, but you look forward to the next day, so you're eager to get to sleep, because now we're going to finally be in this holy place, this thin place, this place that has been set apart. And when you come in and see the majesty of the building, it takes on a bit of a different approach, because you recognize it as being an act of worship itself. The architecture alone is intending to do that. And then rather than just simply looking around and marveling, maybe you've already been keeping track and you know that over in this transept over here is where Chaucer is buried, and Queen Elizabeth I and Queen Mary I are buried over here, and maybe you'll make sure that you take a time to actually participate in a service and that you would actually engage in a Eucharist service in Westminster Abbey, as millions have done for over 1,000 years before you. And then when the days are done and you make your journey back home, then you start reflecting on what you've experienced. You start to wonder, okay, what have I done? I have done something that you cannot do in the same way in Canada. There are no thousand-year-old cathedrals in Canada. But I've participated in that way. I have worshiped with the saints who have gone on before me, who have been buried and have been underneath my feet the whole time I was at Westminster Abbey. What does it mean that I am now coming back to the Church of the Good Shepherd to worship the same God that I worshiped there and continue that thread of worship even here? Pilgrimage is an intentional way to travel, in a way that is meant to make a difference in our lives in some way. It might be a profound change, it might be something subtle, but nevertheless, it's meant to make a difference. Now, this notion of pilgrimage has been a long tradition with Christianity, but it is not something that originated with Christianity. In fact, for us, we take our notion of pilgrimage from the ancient Israelites who had gone on before us. We read in the Hebrew Bible about how the Israelites went from Egypt to the Promised Land with this portable place of worship called the tabernacle, an elaborate tent, which was understood to be where God would be present. And then when King David took the city of Jebus and changed it to the name of Jerusalem and set apart a particular high place in that Mount Zion that on which the city was set, this is where the tabernacle is going to be, then that's where people came to worship the Lord. And then when his son Solomon built the temple on that location, this now became a center point of worship for the people of Israel. So much so that the idea was that they were all to come to the temple 3 times every year, no matter where they lived in the kingdom. They'd come in the spring for Passover. Then about a month and a half later, in the early summer, they would come for Pentecost. And then in the fall, they would come for the Feast of Tabernacles. And we might imagine what it would be like back then to have to do that. Let's imagine that we are an ancient Israelite family living up in the northeast corner of Israel somewhere, and we need to make our journey to Mount Zion, to the holy place where God is understood to be. And I can imagine that, especially once the temple was completed, that could be a pretty amazing experience. And I can imagine that family saying, all right, it's now time for Passover. We're going to go down there. Come on, honey, let's get up on our donkey and let's make our way down to Jerusalem and see the new temple. And so they are looking forward to coming down. They come to Jerusalem, or really rather come up to Jerusalem, and they see the temple and they're amazed at how beautiful it is and it's great. And oh yeah, there's family here now. We're all gathered together. And you know, there's Uncle Bob, you know, well, maybe I should use a different name. There's Uncle Jack, you know, and you'll understand why in a minute. You know, there's Uncle Jack and you know, we've got family and friends and this is a great thing. And then it's over all too soon and you go back home and you're thinking, oh, it won't be long. We get to go again. And then, sure enough, Pentecost comes, so you make the trip again, and now the temple, oh yeah, it's just like I remembered it, it's beautiful, and you see family and friends. And then a few months later, finally back for Tabernacles. But then after the next year goes, and the next year goes, I imagine there might be the thought that, you know, perhaps, you know, the man of the house is saying, okay, it's time for us to go again, it's coming up on Passover time. And maybe his wife replies saying, yeah, but, you know, like, really? Again? Like, we seem like we were just there. Like, we've got kids now. We've got, like, a 4-day journey, and we have kids. We got to do this? Yeah, we got, okay, all right. So let's pack up the kids and load up the donkey. We're going to make our way up to Jerusalem again, and, yeah, there's the temple again, and it looks like we saw before, and it's the same. It's still the same temple. And oh yeah, we're going to have family there. And oh yeah, Uncle Jack's going to be there. And then all, you know, see why I said that now, right? So now all these people are going to be here and it's going to be busy. It's going to be packed, but you know, it is what it is. And that's what we do. And we could imagine that after a while, that 3 times a year journey to the temple in Jerusalem might have become pretty familiar, pretty typical. Pretty much, this is what we do, and it might lose the amazing sense it had the first few times they went, when it was like this touristy magic of seeing the temple. In order to avoid that kind of scenario happening, it would be important for the families of Israel to see their journey to Jerusalem as the pilgrimage it is intended to be. And it just so happens that King David, inspired by the Spirit of God, wrote a number of songs to assist the people in this journey. These songs were used in a formal liturgical sense, but also were used by the people themselves to help them on this journey, help them on this pilgrimage. These songs are found in the Book of Psalms. There are 150 psalms in the book, and 1/10 of them, 15 of them, are called the Songs of Ascents, Psalm 120 to Psalm 134. And we chanted Psalm 122 this morning. I was glad when they said to me, "Let's go to the house of the Lord." And what these psalms were doing were they were meant to provide a means by which the families of Israel could be thinking about what they're doing as they're making their journey to Jerusalem, so that it is a pilgrimage and not merely this little trip they have to endure. And so if we were to imagine ourselves as being that family again, living up in the northeast corner of Israel, and we are going to have to go to Jerusalem, we might make use of the Songs of Ascents to help us with that. And so what we would do then is we would turn to our dog-eared hymn book, this Psalter, and maybe as we launched out on our journey, we would be making our perspective clearer by thinking about Psalm 120. "In my distress, I cry to Yahweh that he may answer me. Deliver me, O Yahweh, from lying lips, from a deceitful tongue." Maybe that gets us started as we begin the journey. Then Psalm 121, "I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where will my help come? My help comes from Yahweh, who made heaven and earth." And then as we carry on, maybe it's day two or three, Psalm 122, "I was glad when they said to me, let us go to the house of Yahweh. Our feet are standing within your gates, O Jerusalem." Now the four-day journey is done. We're in Jerusalem. We're looking forward to the temple. Psalm 123, "To you I lift up my eyes, O you who are enthroned in the heavens. As the eyes of servants look to the hand of their master, so our eyes look to Yahweh our God until he has mercy upon us." You can see how meditating on these things as they make their journey helps focus their attention on why they're going to Jerusalem in the first place. And then we learn from a document called the Mishnah that the liturgical, formal liturgical use of the Songs of Ascents were conducted once all of Israel had gathered at Jerusalem at the Temple Mount. They're called Songs of Ascents, by the way, because Jerusalem was on a very high point and the temple was on the highest point, so people were literally ascending to the temple, and figuratively, of course, ascending, lifting their concept up to meeting with God. But at the temple itself, there were 15 steps leading up to the temple. And so the priests would go to the first step in procession and recite the first of the Songs of Ascents. And then the second step would be the next psalm and the third step and so on. So by the time they got to the fifth step, they're thinking about Psalm 124 and reciting, "If it had not been Yahweh who was on our side when our enemies attacked us, then they would have swallowed us up alive. Our help is in the name of Yahweh who made heaven and earth." Then the next step. "Those who trust in Yahweh are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but abides forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so Yahweh surrounds his people from this time on and forevermore." And then another step, "When Yahweh restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter and our tongue with shouts of joy." And step after step after step, the people of Israel are led in this impressive and intentional worship of God, being led by the reflections given through the Songs of Ascents. Well, when all is said and done, the pilgrimage doesn't end, because now this family has to get back to where they live. And at this point, the Songs of Ascents, even though they are now descending from the glory of the temple to the humdrum of everyday life, can still be guided in their thoughts. As they reflect, as they go back to their jobs, as they go back to building their households, the fact that Psalm 127 says, "Unless Yahweh builds the house, those who build it labor in vain." And as they go on to live out day by day in the worship of God, "Happy is everyone who fears Yahweh, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be happy, and it shall go well with you. What an encouraging thing to think about as you're going back to everyday life, tilling the fields and taking care of the flocks. Psalm 133 reminds everybody how good and pleasant it is when kindred live together in unity. Yeah, even with Uncle Jack too. Yes. For there Yahweh ordained his blessing, life forevermore. Then finally, the last psalm, may Yahweh, maker of heaven and earth, bless you from Zion. A reminder that even as you're living in the far northeast corner of the kingdom of Israel, the blessing of the God of Israel is extended to you from Zion, from that place that you went, from that highest of places where you gave yourself in worship to God. What a powerful way to change this regular three times a year journey the Israelites had to do, to make it from simply a trip to endure to a pilgrimage that makes a difference, that makes a change. Now, that's great that this is an example for us, but it is important for us to understand that the songs of ascents do not simply remain as something the Israelites used, but something that we are able to make use of as well, and appropriately so. Eugene Peterson was a Presbyterian minister for 30 years before he became a professor at Regent College in Vancouver. He has since retired, and I forgot to look up. I can't remember if he might be the late Eugene Peterson or if he's still just retired, but nevertheless, in 1980, he wrote a book, his first of many books. And this book, he will tell you, was the underlying theme for every other book he wrote after that. It was a book called A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. Interestingly, quoting Nietzsche, a rather famous atheist, but nevertheless, that's the title he used. It's all about Christian discipleship. And of all of the chapters in this book, about 17 of them, 15 of them are based on the 15 songs of ascents. What Peterson found is when we consider what it means for us to grow in the likeness of Christ, to be more like Jesus, to walk in his ways, we find great help in the songs of ascents in the book of Psalms. Here's what he had to say. We are people who spend our lives going someplace, going to God, and whose path for getting there is the way, Jesus Christ. And so, there are no better songs for the road for those who travel the way of faith in Christ than the songs of ascents. Since many essential items in Christian discipleship are incorporated into these songs, they provide a way to remember who we are and where we are going. And so we are inspired by these songs, not just simply as an example of what the Israelites did that we can share as well, but they provide for us things that will help us meditate on our pilgrimage, the pilgrimage of our life in general, but also the other pilgrimages that we do. We all continue to have pilgrimages, or we should, I would suggest to you. Not just three times a year like the Israelites did, but let me suggest to you 52 times a year. That every time we make the journey from our house to this house, we are on a pilgrimage. That we are not simply getting into the car to get to church, although it might feel that way. It's like, oh man, we slept in, we gotta go, hurry up kids, let's have breakfast and let's load up the car and let's get in there because we don't want to be late for church, we gotta get there. You know, I mean, that's one way to do it, but you know, we're fighting traffic and all of that. You know what kind of traveling that is? Commuting. And nobody looks forward to commuting, right? So let's not commute to church. Let's think of our journey from our house to this house as a pilgrimage. And what can we do to make that journey intentional, something more than just simply showing up to church on time? Well, it's something to think about. Maybe it means reading a song of ascent. I don't know. For me, what I do, I listen to Shine FM once a week. And I do that when I go to church. For me, that's the only time I turn on that channel and I listen to a couple of songs about Jesus, and it helps me remember that I'm coming to the church for something different than just going to work, in my case, right? So that's what I do to try to make it a pilgrimage from my house to this one, and then I'll listen to it again on the way home just to make it different. But something to think about. There's that pilgrimage. There's also another pilgrimage that we participate in, and this is the one that happens at the beginning of the service. You're not doing it physically, but you were observing it and meant to be embracing it and to be thinking about it as it happens. And what I'm talking about here is the processional, where the communion assistants carrying the cross and I make our way from the back of the nave, and we journey towards the front to the holy table, to the sanctuary. We acknowledge the idea that this has been set apart for the worship of Christ. And we are invited and inviting all of you to make this journey as we are coming to the Lord for the purpose of this service. And so that is a pilgrimage. It's not simply the thing that we do. It's not just the neat little ceremony we do, but it's meant to be something we participate in to prepare us in the gathering of the community as a worshiping community of our Lord Jesus. And so the thought is, how do we prepare for that? Well, our liturgy booklet has some meditative thoughts that you can have in the front of it. When you first open it up, there are a few things that can guide you into some meditation and prayer, especially after the gong goes off and Jason is playing the prelude music. That's the signal and the opportunity to start centering yourself more than before in preparation for worship. And maybe those words in the liturgy booklet will be helpful to you, or maybe it can be your own prayer or thoughts. But the procession now brings us into the presence of Christ, as it were, specifically for this purpose. There's another pilgrimage. You'll be doing this in a few minutes. And that is your pilgrimage from where you are sitting now up to the holy table and taking your place somewhere around the altar rail. What you're doing there is you're going from your place in the nave and approaching the Lord, as it were. You are coming to receive from Jesus. You are coming to receive bread and wine, but by faith, the body and blood of Christ, which changes us, which heals us, which empowers us, which nourishes us. And so the key here would be to think about this move from there to here as not simply getting in line, but instead making that journey, ascending, as it were, up to the temple, if that image helps you. That you are actually coming up to the Lord to receive from God. And then when you return, you reflect on what it is you've participated in. That it isn't just the second last thing to do before the service is over, but it is a significant part of the service. And we get to linger in the thought of what we have done by receiving from the Lord in that way. The final pilgrimage is at the end of the service. And like the processional, the communion assistant and I, following the cross, make our way from the sanctuary through the nave, out the door. And again, you'll be following us literally shortly afterwards. But the idea is now, having done this, we return to our home, we return to everyday life. And what happens at the very, very end is we are given a commission. Let us go forth in peace to love and serve the Lord. That it's not that the service is over, but we are now simply launching into the next part of why we have gathered. That it's not we're done until next Sunday, but having met here today, we are now deliberately, intentionally going forth to love and serve the Lord. The pilgrimage continues. And every Sunday, we come here and we go back, and we come here and we go back. And yeah, it can become the boring thing that we do every Sunday if we let it. It's the same liturgy. Well, not always, but you get the same rhythm. But things change. But it can become normal, and it can become just what we do unless we are intentional. So let me encourage you this morning to consider the pilgrimage that you are on. Your life in general, but every Sunday as you come here, even as you go from there in your pew to the altar rail, let it be intentional. Let it be spiritual. Let it be focused on our Lord Jesus. Be inspired by the songs of ascents. Take the example of our ancient Israelite brothers and sisters. Let it be that your time here is something that affects and changes and alters what your life is like out there the other 6 days a week. Amen.